Sarah Volpenhayn is a Report for America core reporter. She covers underserved communities at the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. Sarah, thanks a lot for joining us today.
Hi, thanks for having me.
I gave some outlines of the trends we're seeing. Sarah, can you spell it out for us a little more? What are we seeing when it comes to positive tests for COVID in our nursing homes in the state?
Yeah, sure. So as the Delta variant continues to sweep across the state and the rest of the country, we're seeing a bit of an increase in the COVID-19 cases among nursing home residents in the state. So in late August, for the first time since January, we saw numbers higher than 50. We're seeing kind of a spike in cases that's really developed over the last couple months or so. After the vaccine became available to nursing home residents who were some of the first people to get the vaccine back in December, January, February, we saw cases just plummet, and they really remained under like 20 cases a week for months until just recently, as the Delta variant has really emerged. And in the last week of August, we saw nursing homes in the state reporting close to 60 COVID-19 cases in residents in a single week. So that's a lot higher than we've seen at any time recently. But just to put this in perspective, back during the peak of the pandemic in November, there were hundreds of cases of COVID-19 in residents every week, as many as 800, 850 in the worst week. Hundreds of nursing home residents were dying every week because of COVID at the peak last year. So things are still much better than they were at the worst point, but the Delta variant is still worrying. Nursing home residents are still at risk for infection, even though most of them have been fully vaccinated against the virus. But at the same time, the vaccine does still provide a great deal of protection for nursing home residents.
Right. I had mentioned that's some of the good news we're seeing here. What are we seeing when it comes to the severity of these cases in nursing homes?
Sure. So I talked with a few of the nursing home administrators at nursing homes that saw some large outbreaks recently in recent weeks. And they, all three of them, told me that the residents who got infected had, for the most part, very mild cases where they had very mild symptoms or no symptoms at all in some cases. So they really told me that despite the outbreaks that they experienced, where most of their residents had breakthrough infections where they had been fully vaccinated but still ended up infected, despite that, their confidence in the vaccine was just that much stronger because their residents, for the most part, didn't get badly ill from the virus.
And we know early on in the vaccination effort, these nursing home residents were at the top of the priority list for a lot of good reasons. What are we seeing when it comes to vaccination rates among those nursing home residents now?
Yeah, among residents, they were very receptive to the vaccine from the get-go. So as the numbers have come out, we've seen that, around 85% of nursing home residents in the state have been fully vaccinated against COVID. And that's been pretty consistent since the vaccine rolled out in January. You were hearing from nursing homes at the time that their residents were very eager to get the vaccine.
Before we turn to staff members, workers at nursing homes and their vaccination rates, I want to talk about the kind of precautions in place, the protocols, when there is that COVID positive test for a nursing home resident. Even if it's a mild case, what kind of things did you hear from nursing home administrators about what they do when that happens?
Yeah, so normally they would ramp up testing. So they would, increase testing of residents and staff members when they have a positive case. And in many cases, they are already doing testing based on the positivity rates in the county that they're in. They would also be quarantining positive residents. So they, I believe now the quarantine period is 10 days. So they wouldn't, you know, be allowed to interact with other people in the facility for like 10 days. Staff who would have to take care of them would, you know, use full PPE around them. So that would be, you know, a mask, a gown, a face mask, that kind of thing.
Sarah Volpenhayn is a Report for America Corps reporter and writes for the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. She's talking to us about a recent increase in COVID cases in nursing homes, still not at pre-vaccination levels, but the trend with Delta moving up a little bit. A lot of people vaccinated, though. Coming up, we'll talk about vaccination rates among nursing home staff here in Wisconsin. You could join in at 800-642-1234. If you have an experience with a nursing home in recent weeks and days, if you work in one, live in one, or have loved ones, what precautions are you seeing? Are things looking a lot better than they did, say, pre-vaccination? You can call in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. You can also email ideas@WPR.org. We'll pick up the conversation coming up on Central Time. You're listening to Central Time. I'm Rob Barrett. We're picking up our conversation now with reporter Sarah Volpenhayn, who writes for the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. She's telling us about the increase in COVID cases in nursing homes as the Delta variant spread, still not at the worst levels we saw pre-vaccination. You can join in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. If you have a firsthand report from a nursing home as a family member, a resident, a staffer there, 800-642-1234 is the number to call. Sarah, vaccination rates for nursing home workers, you report about 62% of Wisconsin nursing home workers vaccinated, but a lot of variation from one part of the state to another, one facility to another. Can you talk about that range?
Yeah, that's right. Like you said, overall, about 62% of people eligible to work in nursing homes in the state have been vaccinated. That can be anybody from the nurses and aides who are the most closely in contact with residents to therapists and physicians who might stop in and work with residents from time to time. But yes, there's a lot of variation across the state. So, you know, vaccination rates range from a low of like 22% at some facilities to a high of 100% at others. Some nursing homes have mandated the vaccine on their own accord of their staff members and have been able to achieve very high vaccination rates in, you know, the upper 90% to 100%. The one that I picked out in my story, at the time in late August, they had a vaccination rate of 22%. This was Riverdale Healthcare Center in Southwest Wisconsin. And another one on the other end of the spectrum had all of their staff members vaccinated, and that was Sauk County Healthcare Center in Reedsburg. It definitely reflects this wide disparity between nursing homes. And we do have a feature on our website where you can look up your nursing home or your family member's nursing home and see what their most recently reported staff vaccination rate was.
Bring on a caller now. Larry is with us in Prairie du Chien. Larry, hi.
Hi.
What do you want to tell us about, Larry?
Well, my wife is in a nursing home and has been for basically 2 years now. And right now we are locked out again. We cannot go in to see her. First, it was a case of a positive test in a staff person. Then, a week later, after they had told us that it would be like 2 weeks, we would be shut out. Then, after a week went by, then they called and said, well, now one of the residents had tested positive. So now you add another week on. So hopefully nothing else happens, but that means it'll be at least 3 weeks again. And I, you know, so many of the people there, what means it, the only thing that means anything to them is having that contact with their loved ones. I mean, in my particular case, that's the only thing that means anything to my wife. Zoom calls, window visits, that doesn't mean a thing. And I have spent enough time. Excuse me.
I'm sorry, Larry. Yeah.
I spent a lot of time in those places. And I can see what it means to those people to have personal contact. And I just feel it's so selfish for people to, whatever, selfish reasons to not get vaccinated so that we can protect and get rid of this thing. I mean, your actions have ramifications. And I guess that's it.
All right, Larry, I am so sorry. That's so hard, and I feel for you and your family, and I hope you can go see your wife soon. Sarah, are we seeing this happen when we have these cases, families like Larry's being shut out for a couple weeks, a few weeks at a time?
Yeah, thank you, Larry, for sharing your experience, and my heart goes out to you and your family. Yeah, that's really the hardest part about this most recent uptick in cases is that, you know, this has direct effects on nursing home residents and their family members. And that's what I hear from family members and also from nursing home officials and trade group representatives is that they don't want to go back to the times where we had these mass lockdowns of nursing homes and people weren't allowed to see their resident or their family members for months on end. And that's really why a lot of nursing home trade groups and officials are really pushing the vaccine and encouraging their members to either require the vaccine in one trade group's case of staff members or to really highly encourage their staff members to actually get the vaccine because a lot of industry leaders say that this is the only way we're going to get out of the pandemic is if we really bring up the vaccination rates among staff members so that we don't have to keep locking down facilities and have, you know, this isolation that is really hard on residents and on their family members.
Larry, thanks again for that call and best of luck, I guess, to you and your family. I hope you can visit your wife again soon. And Sarah, thank you so much for sharing your reporting with us today.
Thank you.
That's Sarah Volpenhayn, a Report for America Core reporter. She covers underserved communities for the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. She talked to us today about COVID in Wisconsin nursing homes, precautions taken there. You can find her reporting, by the way, at jsonline.com, along with that online tool she mentioned, looking at vaccination rates in nursing home facilities around the state. This is Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. If you're looking for some nice vegetables, you might reach for your garden or farmer's market or the produce section at the local grocery store. But our guest on this week's edition of Food Friday says we can broaden our vegetable horizons with plants that are foraged in nature, maybe even in our own backyards. And that might give us some respect for a lot of the plants we think of as weeds. Alan Burgo is a chef. His new book is called The Forager Chef's Book of Flora, Recipes and Techniques for Edible Plants from Garden, Field, and Forest. Alan, welcome back to Central Time.
Hey, thanks for having me. It's good to be back.
As a chef, you're clearly excited about using these foraged plants. What is it about foraging and using these ingredients that gets you excited?
Well, I'll tell you, when I was working in restaurants in the Twin Cities, I got introduced to wild plants from an area where they were brought to me as luxury goods. I would do the purchasing for some of the restaurants and I'd see, oh, we're paying $10 to $12 for nettles or lamb's quarters or purslane. And farmers would bring these things to us because they knew that we wanted them. So I was really introduced to a lot of common garden weeds that are edible as luxury ingredients that I may be purchasing for more than I would conventional vegetables. So I was taught about them in kind of a different way than most people, I would say.
Now, your book is more about using forage plants. You do give some thoughts about safety. I think the main rule is do your homework before you start randomly picking up plants and eating them, right?
Oh, yeah, of course. You need to know exactly what something is before you eat it. But most of the things that I cover in the book are very easy to identify and very common.
Let's get into one of the categories you talk about, those wild greens. And you answered actually a question I've had. You know, I hear all the time, you can eat dandelion greens. And I'm like, great. I'd like love to get something good out of dandelions. I've picked the leaves, and it seems like they wilt within minutes of me picking them. How should we handle those fresh, wild dandelion or other wild greens we pick?
Yeah, so with any wild green, and really any green, wild or not, that I pick, the first thing that I do is I bring it home and I put it in some cold water. That could be in a sink or in a tub or wherever. And, you know, cutting plants stresses them. So that's what makes them wilt. They're going to wilt right away. But if you refresh them in cold water and then rinse them and spin them dry in a salad spinner, or just put them in some towels and then put them into a fridge, you will never have greens so fresh. And you will also see that by doing that, I have had greens last multiple weeks. Wow. In the fridge.
Yeah, I can't get those dandelion greens to last multiple minutes. So that's a great tip. Now let's talk about using some of them. You've got a few recipes you've shared with us. Wild green cakes. I think this is the first one in your book. What's a wild green cake?
So a wild green cake is kind of a conglomeration of, I started to see different recipes from around, and people would kind of make the same thing. The one in France, and then another one from my friend Sam Thayer, who has probably been on your show. You take cakes, you take some plants, you blanch them, cut them up, mix them with an egg and a pinch of flour, maybe a little grated nutmeg, and you make them into little patties, and you cook them up, and they're kind of like green burgers. I serve them to my chef friends. I serve them to people who've never had wild food, and everybody loves them. It's kind of hard to hate anything in burger form.
Let's bring out a caller now at 800-642-1234. Louie is with us in Oconto. Louie, hi.
Yes, I was wondering two things. One is, what can we make out of stinging nettle leaves? And is there a time of year that they're better than others? Whether they're young or old, does that make a difference? Number two is, how do we use the cattails?
Louie, thanks for the call. Let's start with those stinging nettles. These are things we can collect and eat. They have stinging and nettle in the name.
Yeah, so nettles are actually, they're a traditional food around the world. There's all kinds of different species. Some of my ancestors are from Scandinavia. And when the Swedish ambassador came to a restaurant I was cooking at, one of the things he requested was nettles cooked into something. So we made tortellini. You take the nettles, and to take their sting away, you can pick them with gloves, and then you can blanch them in water. You can steam them. Some people dehydrate them to make tea. But all you have to do is either crush or heat the plant, and the stingers will be gone. And they're going to be more nutritious and, I think, delicious than any kale or spinach people have had. Steaming them is just really, it is delicious. You put a little bit of butter on those and some salt at the table, and it's just a wonderful green. You want to get them in the springtime. If you keep cutting them back, like you can even do it with a lawnmower, you can keep getting new growth. But once the plants have started to make their seeds on the top, they're going to be a little bit tough and stringy, you know, just like an old vegetable in the garden.
And how about those cattails you mentioned?
So, cattails, there's a couple parts that I really like. The first is just the shoot. So it takes a little bit of trimming. I actually have a video on my YouTube channel that illustrates the process. And in kind of the mid to late spring, I'll take them, late May or early June, and I'll break them off. And then you need to go through a couple layers of the outer kind of shell that you're going to toss off of the shoot, and then inside is you're going to have like a half inch shoot of tender kind of crisp vegetable that you can just eat raw. They're really good with cucumbers, but you can just eat them raw, and they're good like that. A little bit of olive oil, some salt, some lemon juice, and they make a really nice vegetable added to salads and things like that. The pollen is actually harvested in the Middle East and in China, and used to make sweets. And I actually make something called pollen truffles, where I take the pollen and I mix it with a little bit of honey and butter, because what could be better with pollen than honey? And I knead it into like a little dough, and you make these little cones that people would eat with a chopstick. It's one of the coolest tastes that I've ever had. I've served it to the Today Show when they were out filming with me a few weeks ago.
Talking to Alan Burgo, chef, author of The Forager Chef's Book of Flora, all about cooking with different kinds of wild plants. Alan, it's fall now. We focused on some more spring-type things. What has you excited out there right now?
Oh, fall. This is the peak time of the year, because now a lot of people probably heard wind last night, and wind in the fall means that nuts are getting blown off the trees. So I just collected a bunch of butternuts. I got black walnuts. In October, I'm going to be going down to my hickory nut spots. You're going to get those in southern Wisconsin and southern Minnesota, especially southeast Minnesota. Mushrooms are also just huge right now. If you have oaks on your property, you can go around and look for hen of the woods. They're one of the best mushrooms ever. And people on the West Coast that have lots of mushrooms, they are jealous of the Midwest, because we get hen of the woods. They're one of the best fall mushrooms that you can get. They're easy to identify. I have seen hen of the woods that are 30, 40 pounds in a single mushroom, and they will come up all over the place. And there's lots of other mushrooms, but the hen of the woods are a great place to start, and they're going to be going for at least another month here.
Another recipe you've shared with us, this surprised me. I got a lot of these in my yard. Milkweed. We can eat the milkweed pods?
You can absolutely eat the pods of Asclepias syriaca and Asclepias speciosa. So common milkweed and showy milkweed. They're also they're both very, very common. You don't want to eat other types of milkweed, but those two are some of the most widespread. You always want to blanch the pods for a minute or two before you cook them. But I didn't even used to call them milkweed pods when I put them on my restaurant menus. I called them wild okra because I don't like the word weed, and everyone likes fried okra. So they're a great substitute for okra in really any recipe that you could think of without the kind of slippery quality that okra will have. They're just a wonderful little vegetable.
And so you've got a cornmeal fried milkweed pod for us. I like okra, so I'm imagining I'd like this. How do we make this one?
Well, you blanch the milkweed pods, and then you're going to soak them in a little bit of buttermilk, and then toss them in some seasoned cornmeal, and you're going to fry them up, and then I serve them with a little dipping sauce. I make a kind of like a ranch dressing out of dried wild onions or wild leeks that a lot of other people will know, especially if you're a morel hunter, because they're going to be up the same time in the spring. And yeah, it's just a great little vegetable.
If somebody's out there thinking, I've never done this before, but I'd be interested in getting started foraging and cooking something, what are some of the easiest ways to get started?
Well, Facebook and social media is actually super helpful here. So I have one friend who moderates over 300 mushroom groups around the world. And I'd say there's about 10 in Minnesota alone. There's a couple in Wisconsin that are very good. Wild Food Wisconsin, a few of my friends run. That's on Facebook. You can just go there. You don't have to post anything. And you can see what people are picking. And you can learn kind of by osmosis, so to speak, there. Another thing is I like field guides. Sam Thayer and his company Foragers Harvest are in Wisconsin. They're right in Wisconsin. It's a great local company to support. And his field guides are the best. They're held as kind of the gold standard in the foraging world. So I would just get all of Sam's books. Those are at foragersharvest.com. And then you know, get into some of the communities or go out with someone. Sam leads classes. There's a lot of classes that go on in the cities, because I'm here in Menominee. I'm just an hour away from that. But there's a lot of different ways that you can get into it. But social media and getting books is an easy way to do it remotely.
You mentioned you'll be out foraging for windfall nuts over the next couple of days. What is a recipe at the top of your list as we wrap up?
Well, I just finished making 400 portions for a festival I'm cooking down in Prairie du Chien of it's called black walnut croquant. I learned it from a pastry chef from Portugal. And you take black walnuts or any nut you can use and a little bit of sugar, and you cook it in a pot stirring constantly until the sugar turns to caramel. It'll get a little smoky, so you want to open a window, and then you hit it with a good pinch of kosher salt, and you spread it out on a tray and let it cool. And I tell you, some people don't like black walnuts. I once served this to to the Bell Museum for about 300 children, and not a single kid turned their nose up at a black walnut. It will make any nut delicious. But that's at the top of my list. I always make that.
Alan, thanks a lot for joining us again today.
Hey, thanks for having me on.
That's Alan Burgo, a chef and author of the new book, The Forager Chef's Book of Flora. You can check out some of his recipes at WPR.org/Food Friday and head over to the Ideas Network Facebook page. Love to hear if you are a forager yourself.